In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah.
Let's all go to the
time for
lobby.
Us to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn, let's brought to you every lobby. Monday at this time by Bangor Mall Cinema 10. 557 Stillwater Avenue, where they have a film for everyone in the family. Alan Adams of The Main Edge with us in studio. Good day, Mr. Adams.
Good day to you. How are you?
Oh, we'll wait for Carrie to turn your mic on. Try again.
am I live?
Yes.
Check one. Check okay. One. Sibilance. Sibilance.
Is this on? How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. Busy. Did some things. Did some stuff around the house. Fixed my porch.
Fixed your porch?
Yeah, no. Wow. Climbed under there. Dug around. Had to put a jack in because we had one of the corners was starting to fade a little bit.
Yeah.
Nothing load bearing or anything, but right. but there'd been a significant gap between the floor of the porch and the pillar, about an inch, and so it was just like, you know what, it's time. Sheridan, bless her heart, has been very patient with me saying, oh yeah, I'm gonna get to that. And then I actually did. So I followed through, which is pretty great.
You're a handy guy.
Not particularly, yeah. But this one was relatively low impact. I will say, I'm a little too old and a little too large to be folding myself into those small spaces and trying to do things. Still a little achy, if I'm going to be honest about it, because time waits for no man.
Right.
We did that on Friday. Did a quick set at the October kickoff party with the focus group. Had some fun.
Yeah, how did that go?
It was great. Like it was a nice crowd, different crowd, sorts of folks that you haven't necessarily seen us before. So that was nice. Raise some awareness of that beautiful space they have over there at the Bangor Arts Exchange. And then on Saturday, Sheridan, Stella, and I participated in the Partners for Peace awareness walk for Domestic Violence Month, month of October. I'm on the steering committee for those folks, and so it was nice to get out and engage with one of their awareness events. And hit the furniture store, did some mattress shopping, did some couch shopping. You know, just a real sexy weekend.
There
you know what I'm
go.
Talking
yeah,
about?
That is exciting. you mentioned the focus group back at it this Friday night.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts how busy the last. The last couple of weeks and the coming weeks are, because we've got a full show at the Bangor Arts Exchange this Friday, October 11th, and then we're doing a guest spot in Winterport the following Saturday, which is October 19th. We'll be doing a show over there in their space, before you know it, the Improv Me Festival is coming back.
Holy cow!
Yeah, November 8th and 9th. Bringing improv groups from all over the state together in Brewer to celebrate just the really just explosive growth that the scene has shown in the last couple of years. It's really pretty great. A lot of your old favorites and a couple of new faces as well. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Excellent. And by the way, I should mention you're looking especially dapper in your Tiger Cats jersey today.
You know, it's funny. This was the last one. I now have at least one piece of gear from every team in the Canadian Football League. And this is hot stuff. Like this, I like this shirt. I love this shirt.
That's great.
And it turned up yesterday. Actually, my wife, bless her heart, was trying her best to hold out. On saving this as a gift, and then she just couldn't resist anymore. She really loves giving gifts, and so they don't necessarily always last to the occasion for which they were originally purchased. So she gave it to me, and I was like, well, when can I wear it that will maximize the number of people that I can make sure see it. So had work today, came in here with you guys, got some focus group practice later. We'll go to the Black Bear afterwards, and then it's off to Nocturnum for burgers and beers. And so I've pretty much run the gamut.
Got a lot of people gonna see that.
You
shirt.
Know what?
And be insanely jealous.
It's pretty dope. It has the added bonus of having a pretty solid schematic match color wise to the Boston Bruins.
Yes,
which is kind of nice. It's an unexpected side effect, but certainly a welcome
one. And it's funny you mention that, because when you came in, I wasn't looking closely. I was making eye contact because they're dreamy, and I thought it was a Bruins shirt, and then I glanced down. It's Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Yeah,
very cool. Well, Let's talk movies.
Sure. Which one do you want to talk about? Well, you want to talk about the one that inspired by The Boss Man and His Kid, or do you want to talk about the one that literally everyone saw at the movie theater this week?
I leave it to you, sir.
Okay. Well, let's we'll start with In the Tall Grass. It's a Netflix movie. It actually made its it first screened, debuted at Fantastic Fest, the horror themed film festival, just a week or so ago, and it dropped on Netflix. It's a Netflix original on October 4th, this past Friday. In the Tall Grass is the title of a 2012 novella co-written by Stephen King and his son Joe Hill. This movie is adapted from that. It's really pretty simple. It's a young woman on a cross-country trip. She's 6 months pregnant. She's driving to San Diego with her brother to get away from the circumstances that led to her pregnancy. Her boyfriend, whose reaction to learning about said pregnancy, not ideal. She's dealing with the morning sickness and all that stuff. And so she has her brother pull over the car. They're out in the middle of nowhere, somewhere in the Midwest. She, you know, leans out of the car to take care of business. And then as she's getting ready to close the door, she hears a voice from out in the field of tall grass, the voice of a child calling for help, lost in the field and needs help to find his way out. And so this woman and her brother, they venture out into the grass in an effort to help this kid find his way out, find his family, etc. But knowing the authors of the story, as you could probably guess, it's not as simple as all that, Rich. It turns out that you know, there's a lot of mysterious stuff going on out there in the tall grass. You know, the rules of time and space don't necessarily apply in the same way as they do, you know, when you're out on the road or whatever. And so these people, they get separated. They find themselves isolated, lost in the tall grass. They can hear each other. They can yell and hear each other's voices. But every time they try to find one another, they find themselves getting turned around by forces beyond their control. Along the way, they encounter the little boy whose voice they heard, as well as his realtor father, who's also lost in the grass, played by Patrick Wilson, who I gotta say, just as an aside, clearly loves doing these sorts of movies. Like, he's got a real effect. Like, you could just tell he's got a real affection for genre films, and we'll talk about it later. But dude goes for it. We watch as these people like sort of circle through and try to find their way out, only to find out that they're just making their way deeper in to the grass and finding that, again, there are centralized, sinister forces at work that they simply don't fully understand, and they don't know why they're there, and they don't know how they're going to get out. Eventually, along comes the aforementioned ex-boyfriend who is trying to track down his baby mama, and winds up making his way into the tall grass because, of course you go. That's how these things work.
Yes.
I'm not going to go any farther than that, just because things get a little complicated. There's a lot of timeline, like, looping and doubling back, and you know, once you start introducing that sort of things, stuff gets a little complicated, and a little convoluted pretty quickly, which is maybe the biggest issue that this movie has. Is, like, I don't mind, like, obviously, like, I'm watching a movie where people are, you know, being trapped in a field of tall grass by, you know, sinister forces. Like, I'm prepared to suspend my disbelief, but, you know, I still feel like you need to establish rules and maintain a consistency with those rules, whatever they may be. And once you sort of veer away from that, like, that's when you kind of lose me, and that things get a little muddy, especially in the middle third of the movie, where they struggle. But they bring it around at the end, and have a pretty solid conclusion. it's less like, it's not a jump scare kind of movie, which is great. Like, you know, like we have plenty of that these days. But I have to say, atmospherically, like the tone, both visually and especially auditorially, is just phenomenal. Like the use of sound, you wouldn't think that, you know, breeze, like the rustling of grass in the breeze could be made to sound like sinister, but it turns out, it really can. Things get real spooky real quick. And there are a lot of, you know, really interesting like camera shots. The performances are solid. For the most part, although, I mean, the only real standout is Patrick Wilson, who just goes bonkers in just the best way. Again, this isn't a movie that's going to make the sort of, it's not going to be like in the horror pantheon or anything like that. But if you're a fan of genre stuff, or if you've read the story and want to see it rendered on the big screen, you could do worse than spend 100 minutes, you know, wandering around this world with these folks.
All right, let's move on to the movie everybody's talking about, for better or worse. Everybody's got an opinion on Joker. What's yours?
You know, it's really funny. I try really hard not to engage with this sort of pre-hype. Like, I don't want to know what you think about what you think this movie is about. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like I'm not here to listen to someone tell me what a movie's about when not only have I not seen it, but you haven't seen it either.
Right.
You know, so it's like, you know, let's just take a step back and I try to disengage and I try to interact with the movie on its own terms and come from there. It wasn't easy because, again, this movie has proven to be extremely polarizing. And there are some things that I maybe wish had gone differently. You know, Todd Phillips complaining about how, you know, people can't make comedies anymore because everybody's too woke. Not a good look. You know, that's not the sort of thing that makes me feel good about engaging with a piece of art. But here's the thing. Ultimately, it's a really strong movie, Rich. Like, it is not a superhero movie that you've seen before. You know what I mean? It definitely treats it with the sort of you know, that through that sort of lens of prestige filmmaking in a way that I don't think we've really seen from these movies before. And I think that's a good thing. I'll give you the basic gist. So we have a gentleman by the name of Arthur Fleck, played by Joaquin Phoenix. It's the early 1980s. We're in Gotham City, which in this particular case is a very thinly disguised New York City. He suffers from a mental illness that causes him, among other things, to laugh uncontrollably at inappropriate times. He's on multiple medications. He's been committed to a mental hospital in the past, although he's loose now, but he does still have to have regular meetings with a social worker. He lives in a rundown apartment with his mom, his invalid mom, Penny, played by Frances Conroy, who is also excellent. And it's basically him sort of trying to make his way. He's one of those sort of invisible people, like at the bottom of the social ladder. Like for work, like he works as a party clown. Like he's one of a roster of shady dudes who put on, you know, grease paint and go like spin signs, or, you know, work birthday parties, or visit like hospitals, you know, like whoever needs a clown. Like, he's basically a clown for hire. You know, he's struggling, but then, you know, certain things are put into motion, specifically when there's an unfortunate incident on the subway train that results in three Wall Street types getting killed, which leads to a citywide sort of condemnation / celebration of this unknown killer, who, the only description being, dressed like a clown. And we kind of go from there, and we are dealing with perhaps one of the more unreliable narrators, because the entire movie unfolds through like his eyes, through his perspective. And we're dealing with someone who is, you know, demonstrably unstable and has a history of delusional behavior. And so you never really know what's real and what's not. And so we follow him through the city as, you know, things begin to escalate, and he finds his way toward, you know, trying to realize his dreams, whether it's establishing a relationship with one of the other women, with a woman in his apartment building, played by Zazie Beetz, who's very good, or realizing his dream of becoming a stand-up comedian, where he goes to an open mic and, you know, feels like he can't necessarily get through his affliction. But that disastrous, you know, incident leads to videotape of that performance making its way to the desk of one Murray Franklin, comedian and late night TV king, played by Robert De Niro. And so, you know, the show that he and his mom watch, you know, devotedly, all of a sudden they're reaching out and asking, well, maybe you want to come on our show. And so the highs are very high, the lows are very low, and you never really know what's real and what's not. And I think that's it's a deliberate choice. It's one I'm not 100% sure I agree with it in terms of the artistic merit, but it's a choice and it's a clear one. And so you have to, at the very least, admire someone willing, you know, to take that tactic. Look, you can argue, and many people are, that this is really just, you know, a kind of a slapdash pastiche of Scorsese movies. Like the comparisons to Taxi Driver and The King of Comedy are obvious, and you know, rendered more, even more so by the presence of De Niro, who it's just like, right. That's almost just like a, yeah, I know, you know, kind of, you know, kind of thing. You know, and so, you know, is it Scorsese and grease paint? I mean, you could say that. I'm not necessarily disagreeing. I'm just not saying that's altogether a bad thing. Like, it's a really interesting idea to take a character like this and sort of ground it in such a, you know, a stylized kind of way, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. It's you're very present in this period, you know, that just everything has this thin layer of grime on it. You know, it's, you know, the city's in the midst of a massive sanitation strike. So there are just piles of garbage everywhere. And you just get to see this sort of societal breakdown happening between the haves and the have-nots in a way that's really viscerally and kind of brutally realized. Ultimately, the main thing we need to talk about with this movie, and something that I think will be talked about ad nauseum for the next few months, is Joaquin Phoenix, because it is a spectacular performance. It is wonderfully physical. Like, he's, you know, and again, the whole joke is like, gain a bunch of weight or lose a bunch of weight if you want to win an Oscar. According to reports, he lost like 50 plus pounds to play this part. You could see it. Like he's very sort of pointy, and like he's all angles and edges, and he's very in tune with his physicality. It's a lot of very deliberate movement choices that are very striking to watch on screen. And then you have the sort of the emotional jaggedness of it all, which he also does a remarkable job of capturing. He finds a lot of very subtle and not so subtle ways to sort of render forth this idea that what we're seeing, it's real to him, but it may not be real to the world around him. And so it's a tour de force kind of whirlwind performance. Like, I would be really interested to know, like, how much of the time on set was just him, because there are an incredible number of scenes where it's just him, and he's expected to basically, you know, carrying it with his body and with his, you know, with his face, his eyes, because he's not necessarily saying a lot all the time. And so to be able to do that wordlessly, it's just, I mean, I think, you know, he's been nominated for Oscars. Like, I mean, we know that he's talented, right. But it's so strange to be talking about a Oscar caliber, like, legitimately, like, I will not be shocked if he not only gets nominated but wins for this. And it's a freaking Batman villain, man. Like, it's a big, it's a clown in a purple suit that they just invented so Batman would have someone to fight, you know. And all of a sudden, like, we're getting this just incredibly powerful and unsettling performance. And that's the thing. Like, this is a hard movie to watch in a lot of ways. I was saying to Sheridan, I'm glad I saw this movie. I will never watch it again. Like, I will never watch this movie again. Once was enough. And I don't mean that in any way other than to say, I got the message. I got the message I was going to get from this movie. It might be a different one than you would get, or Carrie would get, or anybody else would get, but I got it. And I don't need to be taught that lesson again. But who knows? Because, you know, that movie did almost $100 million at the box office this weekend. So, I'm far from the only one.
There you go. Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, Main Edge, talking movies every Monday on Pass the Popcorn.